Welcome to the Great Security Debate. This show has experts taking sides to help broaden understanding of a topic. Therefore, it's safe to say that the views expressed are not necessarily those of the people we work with or for. Heck, they may not even represent our own views, as we take a position for the sake of the debate. Our website is greatsecuritydebate.net, and you can contact us via email at feedback@greatsecuritydebate.net or on Twitter @securitydebate. Now, let's join the debate already in progress.
And it's happened more than once, though, where you pull in and you see the car next to you just start to, you don't realize the car next to you is moving backwards, but it feels like you're going forward faster than you were planning, and you begin to hit the brakes harder before you notice that the car next to you is backing out, and you're like, oh. I really can't think of a way to relate that to security right now. Like,
no, the only analogy I had is being thrown into a project late, that you end up playing the traditional old school security game of no, you can't do it. Well, why? Well, I don't know enough about it yet. So just no.
I was saying that it was more of a metaphor for the fact that security is always continuously moving around you. And just when you arrive at, when you think you've arrived at something, the thing that was next to you, steady and stationary, now it continues to move and there's something new to chase. Not quite the same analogy, but.
But Dan, that was good.
I'm no Brian Schneebly, that's for sure.
It is absolutely amazing at the pace of change. So we were looking at the DLP space recently. And as you think about it, I mean, you've got your traditional DLP players, Symantec, McAfee, that have been doing it forever, Forcepoint, that are all very kind of your traditional DLP plays. But there are so many new, you know, Brian's talked about XDR and all these different kind of blending concepts that are coming up now. It's becoming so much harder. It's not just the number of different companies that are popping up, but the typical Venn diagram, right? Looking at the overlap and how much overlap is too much overlap, or we have duplicative spend. And it's crazy because there's so much money in security right now.
And that's where, like, when you look at each of the XDRs, so what part of the XDR do they make X to have a function with that DLP? And then what part of their EDR do they begin to start doing some of the DLP?
Right.
The same thing on identity access management, the same thing on the SIM side, the same thing on the NDR side. There's like that overlap that you talk about into all the areas. So there is a little bit of spend that occurs that you're like, well, I'm getting some of that, but I'm not getting all of that.
But then the question is, do you need all of it? Right. It's such a fine line between what do you need, what's just good enough, and
comparing the DLP requirements that banking may have versus the DLP requirements that an automotive manufacturer may have,
right,
could be completely different.
Well, it was interesting. I was in a call yesterday, and one of the questions that came up was, you know, how are you guys taking, it was other CISOs, and it was, how are you using technology to make, you know, to make progress in what you're doing in security. And one of the answers that I heard was, I'm taking technology out. I'm taking security technology out because it's just gotten too darn complex. And we've too many things to look at, too many different things to distract, and we're losing focus. And that's one of the, I think that's, there's a metaphor right there for just about everything. There is a lot of technology in place, and there's a lot of, thing, there's always something new and shiny, but do we need to get back to basics?
Yeah.
And that goes back to tech debt as well, because over the years you stack that up as you companies began to make their move to the cloud, then they bought a new tool, a cloud-based tool, and right there you're talking about different overlaps, and before you know it, mm-hmm. and especially with management transitions, right? You know, if there was a management transition, let's say two times in the last 5 years, I bet if you did an inventory of all the things that are owned within the stack, like, well, we need it for this. We need it for this. We needed that for that. We need it. And yeah, you end up finding that you own a lot of different products. And
are we the Great Security Debate advocating a return to every action that's happened is phone called in and handwritten down on a piece of paper?
I mean, on the vendor side, I would say absolutely not. Get the newest, shiniest button out. Ba-bing.
and get my newest, shiniest.
It's interesting. I don't know what you guys are saying, but I'm starting to see a trend again on certain organizations, certain companies, security companies that are trying to be everything, that are trying to, well, we've got something in each of the verticals and, oh, it all plays together. It's kind of the elusive unicorn, single pane of glass that everybody was chasing for the longest time. But
is this 2003 again?
I know. It's amazing how things come around again. And I at least for me personally, I continue to look at it from the perspective that if you're trying to be the best at everything, you're good at nothing. And I think organizations that continue to grow in the security space because they see money in different verticals have to be careful that you dilute what was your core, what got you to where you are. And at some point, if you're not innovating, if you're not top of the, I don't know, considered MQ, the market, whatever you want to use as your terminology, the Forrester wave, right? That if you're not continually focused on being up there, that you're going to quickly fall into irrelevance just at the, like you were saying, Dan, the pace of change at what's coming in security. It's very quickly to be on top today and tomorrow. What company was that? No, never heard of them.
But as you know, as someone who works with smaller organizations who can't afford all of the newest, shiniest across the board, what's the case for good enough is good enough? You know, and by the way, this is, you know, my, I'm well on record for best of breed, you know, for advocating for best of breed. But I'll tell you, there's definitely cases where losing your focus and going for all of the best of breed tools in an organization that either isn't ready for that level or can't afford to support all of those, back to our episode on people and process, put in 95 pieces of tech, but if you don't have the people to run it, I'd rather run one tech stack and run it and learn it really well, one security tech stack, really learn it well and know how it works, even if it doesn't get me upper right quadrant or, you know, the outer, right, outer belts of Pluto on the, you know, whatever shape your analyst report is. But the, and I think that's increasingly important to be able to do with what you can, especially now that we're having people really unable to be hired. We don't see jobs being filled. We don't have this glut of people in our organization to be able to run and grow those things.
Right. That's got to be interesting. You know, thinking about this from your perspective, Brian, that you sell a phenomenal technology, right? Sentinel One is doing great things, continue to invest, continue to grow and everything. And
this episode paid placement. Is not sponsored by Sentinel.
but you think about it, so much of your success is going to be dependent about the organization and how they actually use the tool. And an organization that has the greatest tool, but doesn't put the process, doesn't put the people behind it, it ends up atrophying and produces nothing. And then you guys as Sentinel One end up running a big risk that your name could get dragged into a headline for the wrong reason when it actually, in all actuality, had nothing to do with you.
Oh, I feel like that was somewhat set up because of something that I recently read and heard, but I can't really talk to, but it's 100%
true. You're saying that we know about what you recently read and heard?
I know. I was like,
everything is tracked. We know what you're reading.
First, I was like, Eric, brought to you by Sentinel One. No, that's such a great point. And we've talked about that internally too, about, and I want to just say at Sentinel One, amongst friends, amongst colleagues, Eric, me, you, and Dan have talked about it. You bring this new technology to an organization, whether it's my technology that the company I work for offers or company X, Y, or Z, right? And you put that technology in place. And they really liked what they saw, let's say during a demo and then during a POC, but now you got to roll that out, right? And I thought during the automotive ISAC, when Honda was up there describing their breach that occurred, right? And that they had never planned for everything going down globally. And now how do we even communicate with each other? Like, how do I get somebody, I was so used to communicating with them via this messaging system, I can't even send them this note. And they went back and said, like, once they put an EDR in place, they said it did take some time, 2 or 3 months to get through all the exclusions. But once you work through that and you have that in place, after that, it was maybe one a week, right? Based on custom applications we were building or programs that we developed internally, right? He goes, but when you get through, and we've talked about this, small pain, big gain. You get through those small pain points, right? And you learn how to use it. And I can think of something that just recently happened where a company purchased something 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago. And before they implemented, the CISO left the company along with like 25% of their security staff. Ouch. And they were left with the product, right? Couldn't get it implemented. Then you put resources as a company to try to help them with it. But then the new management comes on board and says, well, we're going to put this on hold for X number of months. And 8 months later, they've never actually got it implemented. Is that the vendor's problem? Is that the enterprise's problem? And then, I mean, you can put whatever marketing spin you want at it if you're the new company that comes in and replaces all of that too. But the point there is the new technologies are new technologies. It's not the same thing that you've used before. And I think that's where there's a little bit of onus on the companies that sell the products to make sure they have good training put in place, right? And offer that to the organizations. The other part to that too is, as part of the onboarding process, to say, hey, why don't we come back and look at this in 3 months just to give them our evaluation of, are you using it correctly?
Right.
Like, because sometimes, and Eric, you've probably seen this, Dan, you've probably seen this, and this has nothing to do with just my product. Somebody goes to put something in place, and as they're doing it, there's a conflict with something that is in production. So they put an exclusion in place temporarily that they plan to come back.
And they always remember to come back.
Yeah. Because it's part of their process change.
Right.
Yeah. But they don't. And 6 months later, you realize that exclusion's allowing, you know, it's not just a little straw. It's a giant straw allowing things through. So I think those are the things that are important because, Dan, you mentioned a certain company is talking about taking all the technology out and going back to people and then working on probably their process next. You put technology in, and although technology can give you speed and can give you hopefully better visibility faster, at the same time, technology can also bypass a ton of stuff if you put rules in place that allow it to do so.
Oh, right. Absolutely.
Well, and at the risk of replaying what I've now brought up in a couple of podcasts about process, though, but I mean, some of those things are hidden factories, right? We've got to be cognizant of that, but it's very easy that we get into this, well, we've always done it this way, so therefore we're going to keep doing this way. Well, wait, why? Why are, I mean, as we look at the change in the game, and I remember this going through multiple implementations as you went from antivirus to EDR and watching that mind shift change, that many companies tried to apply the traditional AV model of, I got to have exclusions, don't scan this folder, don't do all of these things, and then tried to apply it to a whole new space without realizing, no, you don't do that in this world, that you start clean. There's so much power. And yes, it requires a lot more work up front to start clean. And, you know, Dan, or not Dan, Brian, you're kind of talking about when you go in that you start off that you see a lot of warts. There's a lot of work that has to be done, but that draws down, right? It's kind of everything, all of these new tools and everything now are, you know, buzzword bingo, AI, ML, it's all learned, right? And it takes time to draw down on the amount of work up front. But once you get through that, you get to a happy new normal.
The
light bulb going off, the clouds just open.
You win the lottery. It's all perfect. It all goes along with the idea that complexity is the enemy of security, along with a few other enemies. But the more complex something is, the more complexity we add, the more opportunities there are for either misconfiguration, misuse, something not flowing between one of them correctly, not understanding how they work. Or how they work together, or not using or bypassing back to how people actually use tech. The more complex it is, the more chance they're just going to short circuit around something to get what they want to do to work.
But I don't think that's a universal kind of agreed upon methodology. I've seen a lot of companies.
Well, it's certainly not in any business book. Go around.
No, but you think about it. You think about it. And I think, Dan, you and I are aligned on this, that security, using simplicity as a guiding factor for security, is something that we both believe in. But that's not overly prevalent across the security community. There is still a lot of organizations out there that think that complexity is at the heart of what we need to do. I remember talking to somebody that They were doing, I think it was a Teams rollout, and they were talking about having multiple DMZs, and then I've got a firewall that goes into here and then another firewall. How are you managing all of that? How are you understanding kind of change state across all those devices? As you build more and more complexity, it sounds great because, well, I can contain somebody here and then I've broken off this network. And I'm not saying there's no place for DMZs and kind of some of our traditional network segmentation, but I think you can work yourself into such a complex environment that it becomes the antithesis of security and what we're trying to achieve.
A 5 points for using the word antithesis. All you need is a semicolon and somewhere in here, and you will have achieved my rules for a great communication interaction. But no, you're right. There is no, but this is also the same field that worships heroes, worships very, you know, the firefighters, that worships the firefighters, the ones that come in and save the day, create very complex environments that stay up all night, you know, all of these things that are, you know, leading to some other mental health challenges in the field. This is a cultural issue that we need to deal with as a, you know, as a field as well.
Completely agree.
Boil it down to bring it back to language. I think it's attributed to Francis Bacon. If I would have had more time, I would have written you a shorter letter. the beauty of editing, that editing something down, it may start complex, but the real power, the real value in this comes as you edit it down to its most necessary and most valuable. Technologies.
It's so true. I mean, hey, just a simple example. We were looking at some processes internally, and this was a while ago, but looking at like approvals for getting VPN access. And as you started to look at the process.
No less than 6 approvals, please.
Yeah. That's the security group, it was kind of, well, do you always check the box? Yeah. Have you ever denied anybody? Well, no. All right. Well, now you have a perfunctory process. So there you go. There's my other word for the day, perfunctory.
Still doesn't replace the semicolon.
But you think about that. We do the same thing with a lot of our tools, that we get caught up as technologists, that the way we bolt things together, the way we put things in, it sounds good at the time, but we sometimes struggle to take a step back and look at holistically, what are we trying to achieve? And have we created more complexity than we actually needed to achieve that goal?
This is, of course, counter to market forces because, you know, we said earlier, there is a lot of money right now in security and security technology. And there's a lot of innovation that's happening. I want to give credit where credit is due. There's an immense amount of innovation that's happening in this field and space. There are companies popping up all over the world that are doing novel things, that are doing unique new things. And there are established businesses that are continuing to innovate as well. It's a debate in my own head about how much I want to extend into those areas of technology, into those areas of security advancement, at the risk of the complexity and the ability to actually manage it. And I think coming back around, this is a place where, and you know, people didn't know me well will wonder what kind of pod person has occupied my body, but this is a place where having an existing vendor that begins to truly integrate these things can be a way to achieve both of those. But unfortunately, it takes a long time for that to happen.
Right.
In many cases, those vendors, the suite versus best of breed, the suite vendors will bring something in. It won't be integrated. It'll take time to integrate. It'll integrate mediocrely. Mediocrely? Is that a word? In a mediocre manner. And then over time, we'll sort of normalize out if they continue the investment in it. But for the long period, you'll probably get 60-70% of effectiveness over having bought best of breed, but you'll have something. And is that better than having nothing of all that time? Because you either can't afford it as a bespoke product, you can't run it as a bespoke product.
Seeing a few different things happen along those lines, Dan, just being here on the vendor side.
Wait, you're on the vendor side?
Yeah, I meant to tell you guys that.
Like a year. Why was I not told?
I was going to tell you guys like a year and a half ago, but things just kept moving. And I was like, well, run with it. Stay status quo. And Eric, for those listening, I've been a little quiet because I've been having to look up all these words that Eric's been using real quick. just to make sure I understood the definition of them. But jumping in, what you're seeing, Dan, is true. In terms of companies are trying to allow for more integration, right? And that's the whole XDR side of it. But then on the complete opposite part, those same companies are also buying up new companies that are bringing out new technologies that, Dan, you probably would say, there are a lot of really innovative things coming out. And what you're seeing is the ability for them to develop this new, you know, like Eric, you were talking about DLP or identity access management, some of these other feature sets, instead of trying to build those into the product, they're buying company X, Y, or Z instead of integrating with it. They're just buying it, putting it into their product and offering it as another module, right? Because again, as these companies go public, that's part of the push by the street and Wall Street is, are you being innovative and are you offering more stuff? And if you know that that's going to take you 3 to 4 years to develop, then can you use some of that money to buy up this product? But then that's kind of counterintuitive, Dan, to what you were saying about, well, why not just build the integration so it still offers companies if they want or need that, they can go ahead and purchase it and you're willing to do the XDR portion, the integration to your product with it. So I see it on both sides. It's kind of like a double-edged sword. It's, you know, companies such as mine and my competitors are working, you know, feverishly to get ahead, right? And that's pushing the envelope on the engineering side of it, the R&D side of it. And it's also pushing the envelope to say, maybe we need to use this money to buy product X and find a way to integrate it into our stack. So I don't know. I'd love to hear you guys' thoughts because I think some of it's good. I also think some of it's bad because as they buy the products that are being very innovative, sometimes it stalls some of the innovation and sometimes they have to remove stuff that doesn't work well with their product stack, which was some of the stuff that was going to, you know, rise to the surface as cream.
Right.
Well, what do you say we flip this? And as since I've been pro suite for a little while, we'll give Eric the competition drives innovation position. And I'll take the small and nimble upstart. We can move quickly and we can do things no one else has ever had. And let's go from there. You've thought a lot about this, Eric, in the last 4 seconds since I assigned you the role.
The wheels are turning. So what's my role again?
You are competition drives innovation, meaning we need competition in order to, I guess that is the same. See, I didn't think through this before I assigned the roles. I gave us both the same role. All right, you take, hey, we're a monolithic company. We can integrate these things better and they're better held under one moniker. And over time, we will bring them into one stack. And I will take the competition equals innovation, meaning as the small upstarts, we challenge lots of other companies to drive their own innovation and move the space forward.
All right. So I got to defend the big suites.
You do. Here we go. I see I flipped it for a minute.
Here. Yeah. No, it is interesting. I mean, historically, as we look, I think the full suite of products did get a bad name, right? I think as we look back, now granted, that a lot of individuals or a lot of companies that use, and I'm going to pick on Symantec and McAfee again, that if you look at their full suite, there was a lot of big believers that loved everything they had. And for the most part, I think a lot of the integration was good. Now I'm going to, you pick on Cisco, which is probably another one historically that bought up a lot of great products, but the integration didn't happen. Now, granted, way better today than they once were. And as you know, continuing on that, as I look at what Cisco is actually being able to produce with some of their products, the integration, the overarching screen that pulls it all together, the visibility across all of their different segments is pretty solid. And if you think about it from an organizational standpoint, that if I don't have a lot of products in these spaces, if I don't have a big team that can build and innovate and build the dashboards and pull it all together, so if you don't have the capacity to be an integrator, it is very compelling that I may not get the best in any one given vertical, but holistically, as they all work together, they work together well. Look at Microsoft, right? Now we can debate on our feelings on within each vertical and how they stack up. But what I will give Michigan.
Well, we haven't mentioned Michigan yet this episode, so there you go.
It's like, Eric, you must have a lot on your mind tonight with this big game approach. Anything else you'd like to talk about?
Well, the big game, it's all integrated, all one. But as we look at Microsoft, that I think if you pick any one of their products, you're like, all right, it's just okay. The compelling force there is if you go all in across their suite and the way they all play together. There is a compelling story for that. And as you look at up and coming companies, companies that are still building out security teams and platforms, it's a compelling platform that I don't have to go out and find all of these products and then find a way to bring it together. It's already done for me.
But as they've built out, as they've acquired technology or built out their own technology, they've gotten it to a level, and I'm taking the other side of the position here, that they built all these tools and technologies to a level, or look at Computer Associates, where they would buy products, including security products, into the suite. They would come in and they would sit, and they would not, they would take good products off the market, and they would come in and be sold by that by the new owner, but they wouldn't necessarily continue to invest or innovate. And so I think your point works well, as long as there's enough commitment to continue to integrate, invest, innovate, drive them forward to ultimate true interoperability. But just buying it and either shutting it down, because that's definitely a ploy too. Buying it, saying we're going to integrate the technology, but shutting it down as a distinct
taking it out of the market.
Exactly, taking it out of the market is an approach, and it's used. And I think that harms innovation, because now there's nobody chomping at their heels in order to keep both companies driving forward. I really do believe that competition is what drives innovation. Just look at Apple and Google on the mobile phone front. They have different approaches, but they do challenge each other. And when one does, then another one outdoes or comes to the same level. And the rising water rises all boats.
Right. It's a good point. And I'd be remiss if I didn't throw out some book reference, because I guess that's my thing now. But if you look at it from the perspective of Innovator's Dilemma, right?
Yeah.
But if you look at market disruptions and all of that, I think the companies that understand why they're doing the acquisitions and what they're going to do with it end up playing out better. Because if you try to take a small startup, somebody that is disrupting one of the verticals, just pull it in and we're just going to let it sit, you're doing it wrong. Or if you try to measure it by the same metrics that we're measuring the rest of established mature organization, it's going to fail, because it's not going to stack up. You're building a new vertical. You're disrupting a market. And I think companies that are cognizant of that and can allow the organizations that came in to continue to innovate and grow on its own without pulling it into the monolithic traditional security company, I think some of those are poised to do great things, and it will integrate. It will continue to get better. Yeah. Is it going to be best of breed within that vertical? Jury's out. I mean, it's going to be dependent.
There's opportunity to if they decide they want to.
Hey, Eric, and I thought when you said book reference, you might take a stab back at Dan, because he said, rising water raises all boats, but it also hides and impedes jagged rocks sitting underneath the water that are now hidden. So now you have different size boats, different verticals. And as they're moving out of the bay, now you're hiding some of the things that,
GPS reference. I love it.
And I was just going back, like, you guys were having a good argument there, but you're right, Dan, rising water rises all boats, but it also hides some of the little imperfections that maybe were built into the platform that maybe harm some of the other boats that have larger hulls sitting down into the water.
Yeah. What I keep coming back to, and I know we've talked about this before, as we go through, as I mentioned, playing buzzword bingo, zero trust, ML, AI, we could go through the whole list. I still feel that as an industry, one of the biggest disservices that we've done is we don't have a succinct kind of definition for what all of these are. If you look back to the traditional IT operations space, you've got enters ITIL that you have very defined definitions for different components of an operational structure. But from a security, we just use buzzwords. They're just labels. And if you ask
and driven by marketing, not by
right.
by practitioners.
And you ask 10 people what zero trust is, you'll get 50 different answers, right?
I can buy that in a product, can't I? If I buy this product, will I be zero trust?
Is this zero trust certified? Is that, is there a stamp for that?
I used the plug-in module to my OBD2 port from Progressive. Did that mean I hashtag? You ever see those ads? How not to be your parents ads, Progressive Insurance.
Guys, right. Zero Hilarious. Trust is zero trust is actually a bundled combo you get at Taco Bell.
Oh, the number zero.
Nice.
No, but I do like the conversation. I also thought, Eric, your small reference to Michigan was going towards Michigan football. And I think this goes back to some of the stuff we were talking about. Does defense win championships if offense is scoring points? You know, because here you have Iowa that plays a really good defense, has great defensive posture. They put a firewall up in front that is tough to get by. They're going to plan to take down that running back. You want to call him your pen tester, whoever he is, who's going to try to poke holes in the line. They're tough to get by. They're also difficult to throw on, but I wouldn't say impossible to throw on. So you can probably throw some lateral movement in there. But, you know, give me your take on security in this football game.
That's interesting. Is you now forcing me into the Brian Schneebly spot to do an analogy that bring it back to security. But I like where you're heading there, because you think about it in the context. We've talked about this in the castle and the moat and all of that before, that, yeah, the castle walls and all that to protect the crown jewels were great. But then you had the advent of a helicopter, and I just flew right over and landed right in the middle. So it doesn't matter. It's the same thing with the football line, right? Your O-line is protecting your quarterback. You've got the defensive line protecting against the run, which you want to call them your firewall, just trying to push through it. But what are you doing to prevent that throw over center, right? Do you have that warm, squishy internal network and just being able to move around? What's your secondary look like? And we've now gone full football.
And for our non-US viewers, we are not referring to football. We are referring to hand egg American football.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you don't use your hands.
And the other part of that too is, so like you look at, if you want to call it the next gen, right? Like, you're seeing some of these next gen quarterbacks, right, that run and throw, you know, spread offense, et cetera. What I see in the Michigan, University of Michigan, Iowa football game is kind of the back to basics, right? This is kind of that power football, smash mouth. We're going to go ahead and see if we can find some holes in your defense and try to push through. And I was taking this, Dan, a little bit back to what you said when we first started, which was, I'm going to remove all technology and put it back on the people. Right.
Oh, yeah.
In, you know, handwritten little scribbles. Right. And you see, like, on the sidelines, these guys are holding up three different signs, moving hand signals back and forth, and the quarterback's keying in on one thing. But I think this game is just going to be smash mouth right up front, old school defense, offense, kind of football. Like old school security. Yeah.
And when this episode lands on Monday morning at 9 a.m., the game will have been played, and either Ann Arbor will be in flames or Brian Schneebly will be proven wrong. No, everything you've said, you know, it applies to, you know, regardless of the outcome, and is just indicative of Big Ten football, which is one of the reasons we love it. But I think it is a great analogy for what it is we're trying to do. There's coordination, there's concentration, there's defense. Defense is as much a key as offense, which can't be said necessarily for other conferences across college football, where offense is key.
Let's double click on something real quick. So as you think about, you kind of started off, Dan, and Brian just brought it up again. You were talking about, I'm pulling technology out. I'm getting rid of technology, right? From a practitioner, from a leadership standpoint, then how do you look at contract management with a space that is moving so quick, right? So traditionally, we've looked at this. We were willing to sign 3-year agreements, maybe depending on the use case, further agreement, you know, 5 years out or something, because there was an idea of savings because I'm signing up further out in the future. Is that going away now? And are you starting to go to more 1-year terms, month to month? What's that look like?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. In fact, there's a trend in agile organizations, and that's capital A agile, that are also looking at security investment in sprints, in much smaller chunks than even a year. Yeah, it's looking at what do we need for the next 6 months? What do we need for the next 2 months? What do we need for the next month? And doing investment in the same way. And, you know, and rebaselining their investments on a weekly, monthly basis, based on the needs of that day, based on the attack postures. It lets them move and adjust and be agile along with the threat profiles that they're seeing. It's an interesting, you know, you take it down to the 1 week model and you get very, I know I get very squirrely about, well, how can I actually do anything that fast? But if you take it out of the 3 year, 5 year, or even 1 year and say, let's look at this quarterly. Let's not put a budget together for a full year. Let's put a budget together for the next 3 months and say, what do we need for the next 3 months? What do we want to operate on for the next 3 months? And we reevaluate. It's a constantly reevaluating. It's continuous improvement. It's constantly, well, continuous improvement plus continuous integration. You are continuously reevaluating what you need and doing micro investments in that time without being held to a number that you decided the September before, what, 15 months later, that you know what you're going to need then.
Right.
And this is very counter to what, you know, the financial planners are interested in. But it has... Yeah, if you keep it within an epsilon, you say, you know, well, we're going to keep it within, you know, one standard deviation of a baseline number, but realize we're not going to manage to a single, you know, down to the penny. That seems to have been a decent middle ground.
Right.
I was just going to throw out there real quick. It's very similar to what Michigan State football did this last year, which was go out and make some very short-term investments in the transfer portal.
10-year investments?
No. That was a giant CIO award handed out for 1 year accomplishments. So we'll see how that works. But what I was referring to is the transfer portal and the idea of going out there and saying, why don't we go ahead and find us a best of breed running back? Why don't we go ahead and find us a best of breed, you know, left tackle to protect the blind side. Right. And we made some really good investments. At the same time, I'd say some of the investments we made in our defensive secondary were probably some of the worst experiments we ever did, you know, in terms of we hit the transfer portal, got someone from Alabama and Florida, and our secondary pretty much got torched all year. But was that people or was that process, right? But again, I thought I'd bring it back to football there. Those were very small.
But it truly is agile because the attempt was made, an approach was made, a decision was made, long-term commitments were not necessarily made. And once it was realized that it wasn't working, it can be pulled back without having to undo 5 years worth of committed investment and just nuke all of that.
Yeah.
You go in with expectations. We don't live, security is continuously changing. And it's a great analogy. Well done, Brian.
I was going to say, you're going to see a lot more of that in college football with the way the rules are now, where you don't have to transfer in and sit out a year before you can play, right? So it makes it really interesting on the football side. And then again, on the security side, I think COVID started a little bit of this where companies said, I'm not willing to make the 3 year investment on this project just from a budgetary standpoint. Can we do 1 year, right? And then that allowed them to do an evaluation. If the company wants to come back and says, I really like where your product sits, I want to go for maybe a longer term, if you can give me some incentives, great. But it also allowed them in that 1 year to look at it and say, here's the things I liked and didn't like. This additional module you gave me over here, we found totally useless and everything you promised,
right.
You know, et cetera. And I'm just throwing that out as an example.
No, and I think looking at it from an agility standpoint, I love the phrase, don't let perfect get in the way of good. Right. Because I think far too long that we've looked at it. Well, we need a product in this space. We need these accomplishments. And we've gone into analysis paralysis and we end up making no decision, which is far worse than making the wrong decision, realizing it and pivoting. Right. I think we need to be cognizant of that there are no perfect decisions within security. There's trial and error. And we've got to put ourselves in a position that we can continually fail, but fail fast in a contained manner. I'm not talking about just, you know, hey, we're going to leave the front door open. Let's see what happens. Right. But we've got to be cognizant of that.
But there's also an interesting, and I will post this as well in the show notes, you know, to bring this back to the sports analogy, just this year, actually just a few weeks ago, Scott Boras, who's a super agent to a sports super agent, on the days of the owners meetings, the MLB owners meetings or GMs meetings, made a comment about the state of Major League Baseball as it relates to the model that Brian just described, where you the season, and I think if you think in American football, NFL, it's what the Rams are doing right now by picking up very key players in order to, they're burning everything in order to win one battle, one year. It's not about long-term sustainability. So if you take that analogy and you do a lot of investment, short-term investment to make one accomplishment, we don't have the luxury of then going, great, we won a Super Bowl, or we won a national championship, and next year people will expect us to be in a rebuilding year. As security professionals, we can't, we can't necessarily allow for the, we do awesome in one case, we build up this awesome case, we burn all the things, we burn the world down in order to do so through short-term investments, but not be able to live to fight the next fight that comes the next day.
True.
In baseball and sports, you can, the expectation is you go through cycles. I don't think we have that luxury.
Right. I almost wonder, and I'm just playing around out loud though, if there isn't a market for kind of an abstraction layer with organizations, right? That if you think about all the different places that if you're looking at the verticals that I want to do something in the DLP space, I want to do something in the EDR front, you pick your terminology, that you start having companies that move into the, well, what we're going to do is we're going to negotiate on objectives. What are you trying to achieve? And then it becomes an abstraction layer for the technology that I stop caring about who the technology is on the back end. It's all about the objectives I'm trying to achieve as an organization and allowing them to play the integrator, the organization that switches out for best of breed, or it could be all one. That's their problem. I care about my objectives.
Yeah. And Eric, part of that, and I look at this going to the super agent here, is partly on the reseller part of it. If the reseller relationship with the vendors was completely transparent, meaning there's no, I got to be careful what I say here, but there's no double reward here, meaning reward right. for the reseller as well as reward for the customer. If the customer put together what their objectives were, and the reseller helps say, okay, here's what your objectives are. Here are the companies we've evaluated. Here's the ones that help meet those objectives and the ones that do not, rather than here are the ones that we recommend because we make more money selling them to you, or here are the ones we recommend because, we get an extra reward. I think there's, in I say this coming from an automotive background, because you saw some of that with, 40 years ago when they had, if you want to call it resellers, but they were, what was the name that was used? They're literally only like 3% or 4% of goods today bought in automotive comes through them, but they're representatives that represent, manufacturing reps. So manufacturing reps are very much like the reseller side of it. I find the same thing. It's not just resellers. It's also with consultants, right? Whether it's the EYs, the KPMGs, you name it, some of the tools that they build are built to go in and do evaluations using certain vendors' tools, right? Which means they have alliances, which also means that when they come in and you're giving them your objectives, they're also making sure that some of those objectives align to some of the things they use, right? From a consultancy standpoint.
Right.
So there's so much little gray area there. Right. That I also look at it, Dan, that a lot of companies don't have the bandwidth or the number of people to say year in and year out, I can rip and replace all this because of the time it does right. take for certain tools to be put in. Right.
Yep.
And specifically going to the tool I sell, EDR, the number of exclusions that a larger company would have to be put in because they write all their own applications. It's like, man, that took us a few months to do, right? That small pain for long-term gain. Do we really want to do it?
You should just sell easier products.
Well played.
See, it's easy for me to say that, right?
Yeah. And Dan, flipping this back to football, was bringing in Kenneth Walker good for Michigan State University? Because now if I'm a running back coming out of high school and Michigan State's going to give me a shot, what's to say they're not going to go ahead and sign the next one-year guy, which right. they just did with yep. Wisconsin's running back, right? It's like, I don't know if they're going to have the commitment to me for 4 years because they like the one-year commitment.
So this is, I think as you look at VARs and consultants, you got to tease apart the people and the organization, right? We've got to look at that from two different lenses because from my perspective, I think being beholden to organizations is a short-term game that you end up losing in the long run. The organizations are not what are going to help you and move the needle because right what you're saying, Brian, that you struggle at some point to tease apart that, are you selling this because that's your highest margin? Is there a kickback on the back? What's the incentive behind it? But I think as you start to partner with people, then you understand motivations. And specifically, as we look at the security space, we all know individuals that are resellers, that are consultants, and they do it because they have a passion. Because they have a passion for helping organizations get better than they are today. I mean, look at what Dan's doing from a fractional CISO perspective. It's not Socratic that you're getting behind, it's Dan, because Dan has a reputation of the passion on trying to make collectively everybody better. And I think that's what we got to focus on.
And I got behind Dan a little bit too, because he kind of broke up the podcast in the sense that we had two guys here that were Michigan and Michigan State football. And, you know, East Division, West Division, Dan came in with this Wisconsin background. It really made it good for the 1.5 year plan that this podcast would align with the Big Ten championship game.
Is it time for me to enter the transfer portal then? Is that?
No, but I agree with Eric there too. Like, and Dan, that goes to one, the person you are, right? And I think, you know, we kind of talked about this in messaging earlier in the week, right? That when you have someone that's considered a thought leader in the space, right? And this goes back to awards that are handed out, right? And since I've been in the security space, I'm blown away with the awards that are given out every year to the number of CISOs just in the state of Michigan alone. You know, it made me realize that there's a lot of awards that can be won, right? But if the groups that are handing out the awards looked at also, you know, who's looked at as a thought leader in the space, like Dan, I would want you on my panel any day of the week to go up, because you would challenge the other people on there and their thoughts, not just around security, but also privacy, which is becoming not just a major conversation, but one that's overlooked when corporations are making some of their decisions.
Well, thank you both. You're both very kind. I appreciate it. But the world we live in from a security perspective continues to change, and the tightness that comes with the tight closeness that has to come with the technology or parts of the organization and the parts that have traditionally been where the money is made in an organization is coming together in ways that it never has before. Privacy as well. Privacy and security are on a collision course. Security and compliance on a collision course. All of these things make the complexity of what needs to be done that much greater, more things to think about, which, to bring this back around to where we started all this around, you know, the best of breed versus the niche player, the best of breed versus the suite. It actually, you then have to think about where do we make strategic investments in this new, wider, unified world of security plus compliance. And this is compliance bigger than the old security GRC. This is compliance, corporate compliance, bribery, you know, the ethics, the ESG spaces, all of these things are coming together along with privacy. We now have to think about even wider the technology to be able to defend those areas, because, you know, companies are managed to that, not just by their customers, but also by their investors and by the street. And it means that we're going to have to get even better at filtering, at editing down our letters to become as efficient and as productive as possible without growing too wide. And some of that will likely come in the form of a suite of a, you know, a bundle of products that do good things together, or that are like-minded at least, and help you move up and down that flow relatively easily. And I think there's a place for best of breed alongside that too. So the answer is, wait for it, it depends. It's been there a while since I wheeled it out, but there it is. It really does depend. It depends on your situation. It depends on your staffing. It depends on the market you're in. It depends on your attack surface. It depends on the threat model that you are facing. It depends on the type of information that you're housing. It depends on how aggressive your investors are looking for return on investment versus long-term sustainability of a product set, which goes beyond just revenue. All of these things factor into the decisions you'll make when it comes to both the technology and the process. But keep it simple, stupid is not a bad way to start about it. And yes, it will organically grow complex, but every few years, look back, or every amount of period, maybe it's a year, maybe it's every 6 months, if you can afford the time to do so, look back and say, what can I edit out of this letter to make it even better?
Right. And you have to see that through the lens that if you are replacing technologies, yesterday's decisions may not be right for today. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's not that you necessarily made a wrong decision in the past. The space, it changes so rapidly. Organizations, I mean, as we all talk about the digitization of our organizations, they are changing rapidly. That's not just unique to the security space. And as organizations change, what you need, the objectives, what you're trying to achieve are going to continue to evolve with that. So you have to be, and that's the kind of the Kaizen approach, right? Continual improvement. You're continually challenging what you did before to make sure that it's right for tomorrow.
And just to bring it back to football, when you look at a full season, right? And you go through each game that's played, right? Whether you're going up against Iowa today, you were going up against Ohio State before, every single one of those.
Wait, games, hold on. I need to interrupt because I didn't go. I'm not going against Iowa today or Michigan or Ohio State last week.
Sorry, Eric, you said you, not me. I know. Nobody can see. I was looking down. I shouldn't say looking down. I was looking at Eric.
Just like a State fan, you would say you're looking down at
me. No. It was the way the video. Oh, man. This one took a turn.
All right, little brother.
So for everyone listening, every weekend there's a new game to be played, right? And there's new challenges. Some of them are going to have a better running back situation. Some of them are going to air the ball out, which everyone thought Ohio State was going to do to U of M, right? But they kept the game in front of them. There's different challenges in each game that you prepare for each week that you go up against, right? So you could look at that as when you look at your tool sets and the things you're using, there's things that you focus on for different adversaries that are completely different. My question to you guys is, after this weekend, when you look at down the road, should it occur, can anybody defeat the University of Georgia?
Being that this will post after that, after a major set of, actually, well, the Alabama, Georgia is a big, that one will be hard to predict. But I think on any given Saturday, not any given Sunday in this case, on any given Saturday, anything can happen. And that's why you play the game. That's why we play the game. That's why we're in the field we're in. There's no guaranteed outcome. There's no, there's no guarantee that the attackers will always win, you know, that the adversaries will always be victorious. There's no guarantee that we will always be victorious. In fact, you can guarantee we won't always be victorious, but we will be sometimes too.
To quote
I had to bring that back around to security.
Well, to quote a Marshall Goldsmith book, what got you here won't get you there. Right.
Yeah.
If you go in with the mindset that we're going to continue our game plan, we're going to continue doing the same thing, and that's just going to win every game, then the answer is no, nobody's going to beat them. Right. But if you go in with a different mindset and realize that the decisions, what I did yesterday, that we have to adapt, we have to grow, we have to change for what's coming tomorrow, then anybody's beatable.
No, love it. Thank you guys. And I wasn't going to say that I necessarily had an opinion on that, but Dan, when you said anything could happen on any given Saturday, it's who decides to show up that day. Right. And it depends on the people. Right. And there's a different level of grit. And you can have all the technology in the world, But the people that show up to play the game and those that practice really hard at their skill set, right, are going to become or be victorious, right? It's mind over matter.
And that is why we play the game. And on that note, we've come to the end of another great security debate. Thanks, Eric. Thanks, Brian. Fun debate again, as always. And thanks to you for listening. We really appreciate you being here. We also appreciate your feedback. Please feel free to drop a comment if you're on the YouTube. Yes, we have a YouTube. Go check it out. Great Security Debate. Watch it. Leave a comment. Leave a question. We take a look there, and we use those to fuel future shows and improve the shows. You can also email us feedback@greatsecuritydebate.net. You can find us on our website, www.greatsecuritydebate.net, or on Twitter @securitydebate. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again on the next Great Security Debate.